This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Is it morning again in the housing market?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. After all that gloom and doom over the worst housing downturn in more than two decades, a ray of hope dawns on new home construction. It's the biggest increase in more than 2 years. It's almost tempting to break out the happy music.
You're out of the woods, you're out of the gun, you're out of the night. Step into the sun, step into the light.
But hold on, because this rare bit of good news may not be all it appears to be. Marketplace's Elisa Roth has been taking a closer look at the numbers out this morning.
New housing starts were up more than 8% last month. That's because of new apartments being built. More people are renting these days, and there's been a shortage of multifamily units lately. But the numbers for single-family homes were down, which economists say is probably a better indication of how the market's really doing.
Typically, if single family is still moving in one direction or another, that's the way that the headline's going to go. Multifamily construction tends to be pretty volatile.
Chris Lowe is an economist at FTN Financial. He says the total number of new multifamily units for April is still lower than it was in February, and that generally the housing news is still worrying.
Housing ties into almost every one of the bigger stories that relate to the developing recession.
Meanwhile, in other housing news, Fannie Mae just announced it's lowering requirements for down payments on mortgages in areas where house prices are falling. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Wall Street rallied yesterday on a dip in oil prices, but even that good news has been dripping away this morning. Oil prices have soared more than $3 a barrel and topped $127 for the first time today. And the national average for gasoline has been rising all week. AAA figures another penny a gallon increase over the past day to ring in at nearly $3.79 nationwide. That's 39 cents higher than a month ago. And how does $4.45 a gallon sound? Not good at all if you're a truck driver these days, because that's the new national average for diesel fuel. It's going to take more than a few minutes of trading to sort out this morning's jumble of news. At the moment, Wall Street traders are staying near the center line. The Dow is off 12 points, a tenth of 1%. The Nasdaq's down 8 points, a third of a percent. The S&P 500 has shaved off a single point, a tiny fraction of a percent. The recent cyclone in Myanmar wiped out more than 10% of that country's total rice production. The planting season has already started there, and if farmers don't get new seeds into the ground soon, the devastated country could suffer even more from a serious food shortage. Lisa Chow reports.
The Burmese eat more rice than the Vietnamese, the Thais. In fact, their monthly average is about triple that of other Asians. So with the recent storm wiping out so many rice fields, this means trouble. Diedrich de Vleeschauer is with the UN Food and Agricultural Organization. He says poor farmers in the region don't have the money to buy new seeds, but without this harvest, he says, Myanmar could face food shortages through 2009.
The time is running out. We are running against the clock. Rice seeds need to be received in the area within the next 40 to 50 days. Otherwise, there will not be any planting and there will not be any rice harvest later in the year.
He says Myanmar could go from being a rice exporter to a rice importer this year. And this could create more stress on an already strained global food market. Rice prices have soared recently, up about 20% since January. In Beijing, I'm Lisa Chow for Marketplace.
It's not hard to imagine the theft of fuel is on the rise. We're talking gas siphoning from the tanks of parked cars. As Jeremy Hobson reports, that newly popular crime is sparking another boom.
So I'm just going to walk over to a gas tank of a random car here, open it up, unscrew the lid, and bam, free gas.
The fact that it was so easy for me to do that is what has Americans worried about the increasingly valuable liquid investments in the tanks of their cars. So they're heading to the auto parts store in search of a $20 locking gas cap. You need a separate key to open it. Chris Hoffman represents a company called Stant, one of the nation's largest gas cap manufacturers.
Sales over the last few months have just been growing like crazy for locking gas caps. As gas prices go up, sales go up.
Hoffman says sales are almost three times what they were a year ago. So maybe somebody is happy that the national average for a gallon of gas is now almost $3.78. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Friday, May 16th on Marketplace.org. Foreign ministers from the so-called BRIC nations, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, are meeting in Russia today to talk about forming a political alliance. Energy, food security, and global warming top the agenda for these emerging economic powerhouses. And that has some predicting a new force to be reckoned with in the global debate on climate change. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
The meetings represent the first time Brazil, Russia, India, and China have met on their own. In the next few decades, their combined economies are expected to surpass those of the G7, which includes the United States and Europe. That would give this political alliance significant international leverage. Some political analysts see this as a threat. But Berkeley University climate policy expert Dan Kamen says it could also step up international efforts to limit greenhouse gas emissions.
Have a huge advantage in terms of Brazil's biofuels and China and India's wind and Russia's natural gas. So this is a bloc that could set some very aggressive targets if they want.
Stocks in the BRIC nations have risen 70% over the past 2 years. Kamen says if the countries were to coordinate their investments in clean energy, they could become not just global economic leaders, but climate leaders as well. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Pharmaceutical companies are rushing to create the latest anti-cancer drug these days, and with good reason. Cancer has overtaken heart disease as the number one cause of death for people in their 40s and 50s. And according to a new study, oncology drug sales are setting a new pace. Janet Babin reports from the Marketplace Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
The IMS Health study found that the cancer drug market will grow to $80 billion by 2012. Changing diets and environmental factors have increased the cancer risk for people in Brazil, India, and China. Kim Lyerly is director of the Duke University Comprehensive Cancer Center.
In China, they have twice the population of individuals over the age of 65 that the U.S. does. And as you can imagine, this creates an enormous potential for cancer to creep up.
And for drug companies to move in. Pharmaceutical firms with big research and development budgets stand to benefit most from new cancer therapies. But Titus Patel with IMS says oncology drugs are not immune to market pressures.
Some of these products that have been coming online are actually starting to come off patent now.
That will make them vulnerable to cheaper generics. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
British Airways has reported bumper profits for its fiscal year, but BA's boss has denied himself a bonus. That's because of the fiasco over the airline's new terminal at Heathrow Airport. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
BA has emerged from under a mountain of delayed luggage and a mob of angry passengers to announce a glittering set of figures, a 45% rise in annual profits to $1.75 billion. That makes BA the most profitable, if not the most popular, airline in the world. The boss, Willie Walsh, apologised again today for the chaotic opening of the new terminal. And he performed the ultimate mea culpa. He turned down a bonus, which would have been worth well over $1 million.
I felt it would be inappropriate in the context of the very disappointing opening of Terminal 5. So despite the fact that it was a record year in terms of our financial performance, I thought it would be inappropriate.
He may have to wait quite a while for another bonus. Analysts say the high price of oil, a looming strike by BA pilots, and the reputational damage caused by Terminal 5 will hit BA's profits in the current year. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
President Bush wrapped up his visit to Israel today. He was there to celebrate the State of Israel's 60th birthday. Also there to mark the occasion, a Jerusalem conference of Jewish innovators. Among them, Nobel laureates, world-class artists and scientists, and the founders of Google and Yahoo. Which begs the question, why are there so many of them? Reporter Daniel Estrin has been looking for some answers in Jerusalem.
Israel is the 100th smallest country in the world, and it's under constant threat from its neighbors. But it bears an impressive resume. It has the largest number of engineers, scientists, and PhDs per capita in the world. It trades more stocks on NASDAQ than any other country besides Canada and the U.S. Instant messaging was invented here, so was the USB memory flashcard. So all of this begs for an explanation. I asked the question to Nadav Kidron, the CEO of Oramed, a company introducing a new way of delivering insulin through a pill. What's the secret? Why are Israelis so successful at all of these breakthroughs?
Natural resources we do not have. With our neighbors to do business right now, it's going to take some time and only in the future. So I think the only resource that we have is really to use the brain power.
Baroness Susan Greenfield is a member of the British House of Lords and a scientist. She has another theory.
I think in Jewish culture there's a respect for education, which creates the right environment for the human brain to flourish and for individuality to really push itself to its limits.
Fred Worms, a British philanthropist, says it's in the gene.
We're under continuous persecution. You had to make way extra efforts to sustain yourself. There are DNA conditioning, not over two or three generations, but over 2,000 or 3,000 years.
Israel is largely made up of immigrants, many well-educated professionals who left because of hardship in the former Soviet Union. A history of persecution, poor relations with the neighbors, doesn't sound like the makings of success. But psychologist and entrepreneur Ofer Grossbard says all this adversity forces innovation.
If everything falls in place and I'm not worried about the future, I have less motivation. I'll have less initiative.
Israeli President Shimon Peres has his own take on Israeli business smarts. He says Israel's innovation can be traced to one word, chutzpah, or audacity. In Jerusalem, I'm Daniel Estrin for Marketplace.
And I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. We're always interested in your thoughts. We invite you to visit marketplace.org and click on the link that says contact. Thanks for joining us. It's Friday.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.